We live in a fast-paced and hectic world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and out of control. How do you manage all the competing pressures without losing sense of yourself? How do you stay focused enough to not only plot a path, but follow it? Welcome to Master Your Life, a show that offers inspiration, insight, and intelligence, as well as success stories from many walks of life that can show you how you can control your own destiny. Our knowledgeable and entertaining host and her guests give practical advice that you can use every day in the quest to master your life. Now, here's your host, Leah Mattinson.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. I'm host Leah Mattinson. And first of all, thank you to each and every one of you for joining us from wherever it is that you are in this beautiful world of ours today as you're listening or watching this podcast. On masteryourlife.ca, you can pick up the video version. So be sure to join us over there. You'll see that I am now recording from my bedroom. So if you're interested in we've got grandkids that are coming to visit. And so I've been relegated to the bedroom for doing my interviews. Oh man, so much fun. You know, we're laughing and starting out this episode with Dr. David Hardy. Dr. Dave, how are you doing this morning?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
Awesome. His office looks way classier. So you can check that out. That's right. And make sure again to come and check out Dave's work at thehardybrain.ca. This episode, we're going to be talking about something that's near and dear to Dr. David Hardy's heart, and that is the homeless situation, not just in the town or city where he lives, but also worldwide, and sort of what's coming up for people who are homeless, what's created this situation of homelessness and poverty that we are seeing worldwide, and are the things that we can do to help people. What are sort of the primary things that you're seeing, Dr. Hardy, that are of concern to you, that concern enough that you would have got involved in this area in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's just kind of one of those areas I think are underserved in society, and especially underserved in healthcare. I think it's just managed versus actually looking at underlying causes to help people that are in rough situations. And there's obviously a reason why people can't afford or don't have the skills to kind of live productively in society. And of course, there's a huge mental health, and with mental health, there's always a brain health component to it. There's something physical with it, and that's kind of being ignored. And then, of course, there's addiction issues as well, and quite commonly. And once again, with addictions too, there's physical drivers causing people to want to crave and go get this substance beyond belief, and really at the detriment to their own lives and well-being and safety. And then of course, financially as well. And it's just kind of been one of those issues that I've really been drawn to, because it's underserved, and there are a lot of aspects that could be improved, in my opinion, in the health field on this.
Mm-hmm. And so how long have you been involved in working with those populations?
I started working with patients in the post-addiction field, referrals from psychologists or counselors. Basically, when I started my chiropractic career and my functional neurology was, we were looking at the physical drivers and trying to see if we could change how the brain nervous system was functioning to hopefully decrease any cravings and impulsivity based off of what we were finding within the individual neurology of these people. And we weren't in the counseling realm or the actual addiction fields. We were once again looking at the physical aspects that could possibly cause underlying issues, And the feedback we were getting from the counselors that of the people we were working with was that they were able to reach usually a higher level in their therapies because they were functioning better and able to process things a lot better as well. And I'm just like, why wouldn't we want to try more and more of this? And yeah, in kind of the counseling and psychology realm, there are a few stimulation techniques, such as different eye movements or somatic experiences that really help as well. But when we do the neurologic examinations and really pinpoint what areas of the brain and nervous system are dysfunctional, and then really match our therapies and modalities to those areas of the brain, the results are exponential in comparison.
Right. So can you share a story of someone that's had a successful treatment and what their life looked like before and then how it changed?
Yeah. Right. When I was starting there was one, a 20-year-old coming through, and he always seemed very ramped up and angry to some extent, like he was gonna lose it. Mm-hmm. And of course, this is a person that's taking in substances to basically calm himself down. So we were looking at different ways to calm the nervous system down. And there is one day he's coming through and he's kind of in this ramped up state. And another patient asks him, well, What have you noticed about it? And he's like, I'm able to think better. And though, even though he was in that ramped up, really kind of, you think he's about ready to kind of snap, he's still thinking better and clearer and is got that belief from experiencing things that he is able to function better. And, then just looking years after the fact, his career progression hasn't been that relapse. And he's able to move forward in his life and really function in the job world as well, and is doing really well. Another one was another college student came through, and he was having auditory hallucinations.
So he was having auditory hallucinations.
Yeah, he was basically stopping, looking around the room.
Oh, we lost you there for a second.
Yeah, so he would be hearing voices and having to look around wherever he was, whatever classroom or situation he was in, and see if somebody was actually talking to him. And this was happening about a dozen times per day. And we found some things kind of on the neurologic examination, and then we ran neurofeedback QEEGs, so quantitative EEGs. And we noticed that one of his temporal lobes was just lit up like a Christmas tree. So it was way overactive. And we started to train that one site down using neurofeedback. And within a week, he started to notice that he was having less and less of these episodes. And then, of course, he wasn't feeling as anxious, and he wasn't reaching for the alcohol and booze as much. So right there, if you kind of look at these underlying issues and what's causing it and address those, then quite commonly you're able to get into why they're using in the first place.
Right. So it's very fascinating and interesting to me. I worked with a group of kids that were, and I call them kids, they were 17 to 25 year olds who had psychosis. And yeah. The group was supposed to be getting back to work. And so this was usually drug-induced psychosis. So some of them had auditory. Yeah. Yeah. And they were all in that age group, though. And why I say it was fascinating and heartbreaking also, because they all had dual diagnoses. They all had stamps of what they had had in the past. Some of them had been treated for years with medication. And, you know, they can come into the programs and you know that they're going to have their funding cut.
Yep.
When you're optimistic, you think, no, they're not going to, you know, this is a great program and this is really helping people, but it gets cut and then people get really discouraged and it's hard. So I do want people to think about that, because you're asking, as a society of people who are well, you look at people who are quote unquote not well, and you go, well, they should be doing better. What's wrong with them? Why can't they figure that out? Especially if they look decent.
Yeah.
Especially if they look reasonably physically okay. Because you can't actually see this stuff. So it's very hard for young people and old people who are having these neurological problems when they go in to try and get help from anybody. It often falls on deaf ears. And then we wonder why people end up homeless. Well, because they can't get help. And it's often generational too. Like, it's not just that one generation is dealing with these issues, it's multiple generations. So the support people who are supposed to be helping you aren't equipped to help.
Yes. Yeah. And let's look at an easy example such as pain. Well, you've got the sensation of pain, so of course you're going to reach for something that knocks that pain out. And well, there's all sorts of addictive substances that will do that, and the opioid epidemic is documented and well known in that arena. But they were ignoring all other ways to knock down pain and reaching for the sledgehammer and overprescribing that, and leading to this crisis that occurred. But we know that there are different modalities and therapies out there that are non-drug therapies. And for pain disorders, we're starting to see a decline, obviously, in part because some of those are now being recognized and used instead of the other. So there is some hope with that. But the second we mention any other kind of addiction, it all goes to willpower. And of course, have they had any trauma or abuse issues as well? And there are a lot of psychologists out there that are recognizing that there are physical manifestations of all these issues as well, that you can't be overstressed without something physical occurring. And that then leads to, okay, let's have these combination approaches. And we know with the nervous system and the brain that different pathways are going to use the same chemicals. So treating it chemically is not always a good idea. And actually, the efficacy on it is fairly low in research standards. And I was talking to one PhD from University of Calgary, and she flat out stated that you would think in mental health in a country like Canada that you're getting the most updated and research-based evidence approaches. And she's like, no, there's all sorts of other research out there on her area is more on the micronutrients and that aspect. And there is a lot of good solid research on that, and that the other research that's being used to dictate what treatments are used are biased. They're not independently researched. They're straight from the manufacturers of the pharmaceuticals that are being prescribed. That is extremely biased and has really dictated that area of the health field, much to the same way that maybe opiates was kind of the treatment of choice prior to the crisis that happened. And there are similarities in that area, to be honest.
And there are there differences between somebody having an opioid or drug addiction versus a craving alcohol?
Oh, absolutely. There's difference with each substances. And to simplify it, people are looking to change their state. That's why you go out and have a whole bunch of cans of beers or bottles of wine after work when you're stressed out, is that's calming the system down and giving you another feeling. And well, let's look at actually what's kind of ramping the system up and why you would want to use this in the first place. And then, of course, if you're more lethargic, you're going to be looking for something that brings you up and stimulates you. And, and there's all sorts of substances that will do that. So it's all trying to figure out what state somebody wants to be in and then matching that up and seeing, okay, well, is there something underlying that is causing that? Mm-hmm. And some people can go out, have one or two drinks and be completely fine with that and cut themselves off. And others are going to start pounding them and pounding them. So there's also physiological issues behind that. And of course, genetics plays into it as well. And on the genetic side, though, I'm not one that likes to blame your genetics and use that as an excuse. I really like the aspects of the functional genomics, where you're looking at your genomics and, okay, well, if there is a problem with converting dopamine, how can we support those dopamine pathways so that somebody's less likely to have that hit of a substance and go, well, this is the best thing ever and I'm not going to stop using it. And that's kind of the key aspects, is looking at how the nervous system's firing and then also looking at the underlying metabolic and other processes that might lead somebody to really wanting that substance in the first place. And of course, addressing the issues of trauma, abuse, and everything else that would also lead somebody to want to mask that and go into a different state. And it's a complex picture, and it does take a lot of resources, but it's one of those things. Are we actually trying to help people kind of heal through this, or are we just throwing a cheaper solution at the problem and hoping it works? And well, we've seen that doesn't work. So
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
I think it's complex, but it's also simple. Yeah. In that there's simplicity in things, and often we get ourselves tied up into knots about these big social issues. So then everybody, the expectation is now, oh, well, everyone run and, you know, do whatever it is, a virtue signal that you're taking care of homeless people. Like, that's actually the opposite of helpful.
Oh, exactly.
So personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. When you've got a neurological problem, is still your personal responsibility. So you've got to figure that out. I've worked with many, many clients who've got neurological problems and complex issues, very complex family health issues. And one of the things I think we're afraid to do is call other people on their behavior that mm-hmm. is offside, right? So it's just like, you're acting, something is not right with you, the way that you're behaving.
Mm-hmm.
And often when people have neurological problems, they can't self-identify. They're not self-reflective. They don't have that capacity. So it's not that they're necessarily innately evil and trying to be horrible. It's just that they are. And they really don't. If you're not saying to them, hey, like that's what you're doing there is not correct. And this whole, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to be, I don't want to be stepping on anyone's self-identified awesomeness. It's like, no, actually you need to, or the culture is in an absolute mess. And right. that's people's lives are in an absolute mess. So this is the perspective of someone who's, you know, 54 and been working in the field, quote unquote, mental health for many, many decades.
Right.
Both absolutely. Paid and unpaid. And, you know, so not for profit and for profit. And going, no, it's like you have to have personal responsibility in this. Number one, to say to people when they're doing things that are aberrant, which means not proper behavior, to say that's not proper. I just had this really great example. So, and I'm going to share it. So somebody's teenage boy, bless his heart, 14 years old, or just turned 15 years old. And in Alberta, Canada, you can have your learner's permit when you're 14, which means that you actually go take a test, you can write it. And then when you pass that, you can actually drive with somebody in the vehicle that actually has a driver's license. But this young fella decided that he was just going to not bother taking his test for, you know, passing his learner's permit, and then just to go on a joyride. Well, his parent was out of town. So, right. So lots of consequences though, that are not funny. And so, you know, the people can lose their businesses. They could kill somebody. Like there's all kinds of stuff that's serious. Mm-hmm. And so, lots of the friends weighed in and just said like, well, we weren't raised like that. Of course we wouldn't think about taking our parents' vehicle. Like we just wouldn't even think about it. Like you would have asked permission or there would have been consequences. And you know, like it wouldn't even have crossed your mind. And then some other people weighing in saying, oh, well, you know, I went for a joyride when I was that age and nothing happened, blah, blah. But this is where kind of the rubber meets the road, where you actually can't laugh off the behavior that is like offside. And I've not been completely law abiding my entire life, certainly not in the last 3 years. Still don't own a mask. So, you know, so I wouldn't say that I'm somebody that is like a complete stickler for things, but when we go, where you're causing potentially harm to other people, there has to be sort of an agreed upon boundaries where it's not okay to just behave completely aberrantly. And that includes, absolutely. You know, being drunk when you're little, allowing drugs and alcohol into your little people's hands, and then putting the blame on the quote unquote system. It's like, no, you're the adult. You're supposed to be taking care of those little ones. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And your friends aren't supposed to be talking you into that. It's okay to act that way. Nah, it's okay. It's all right if they do that. It's not for their neurology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and a lot of us too, like we've all kind of gone through that party phase in our life, and some it's been longer than just a little phase, obviously. Mm-hmm. And all sorts of stupid things happen from that as well. So it does come down to a lot of those decisions, and a lot of people are looking for that escape though as well. And there's some reason that they're drawn to that party lifestyle and everything else. And it is one of those things that, well, how do we not become the fun police, but at the same time help people that are struggling in this multi-modality and way? And it is a combination of all of the above, that there is still decisions that people can make, and
right.
and they're going to be foggy or clear. And I'd be a hypocrite to say that mm-hmm. the party phase and everything else didn't happen in my life as well. And and that there were poor decisions made with that.
Sure. And the brainwashing that goes along with that too. So part of it is like letting ourselves off the collective hook, because there's been very intentional brainwashing around all this terrible behavior. You know, when you've got your newscasters on in the morning mixing cocktails, because that's how
they're coping. Yeah.
That's how they're coping. So it's okay to do that. But we're all very heavily influenced by that. But if you sat back and thought about what you're trying to create in your life, which is what people are doing when they're listening to this podcast.
Absolutely.
This one, Master Your Life. So it's not like whatever, the million other things that people listen to. You're here listening because you're trying to figure out, how did my life get to have these pain points that I don't like and that I want to actually improve upon? So to kind of whitewash it and say, no, it's like you have to go, there is something wrong here that I don't have control over, and that I could end up homeless. You know, the town I live in, there's not one single service for homeless people here. And I'm like, what do they do for homeless people? Where are they? I live in a city. It's like 30,000 people. Where's the homeless people? Everyone looks around blankly. I don't know where they are. Maybe they're in Red Deer, Dave.
Maybe.
Maybe they got shipped to Red Deer. Like, they're shipped somewhere. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody here can afford a house. So where are they?
Yeah. And it's not just all the addiction realm as well. There's a lot of people that are facing financial hardships with everything that's happening as well, that are on the cusp of this. And of course, we all think that these issues are so intertwined. And in a lot of cases, it's not. It's something else going on. So I don't want to lead people down that road that, no, we think all homeless people have an addiction problem or something going on there. And it might be something else. And those supports are coming in. There is, of course, a lack of affordable housing for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge segment of the population where they're spending over half of their income on housing. Mm-hmm. That leaves very little to nothing left over. Mm-hmm. And then you have to think of the houses they're living in. It's probably not a great situation anyways. And a lot of these places are probably not good for their health either. But it's a complex issue that needs a lot of attention. And it's a problem that's obviously getting worse and worse. And with the economic and social concerns that are happening, or that may increase, we don't know. Is this problem going to get worse before it gets better? And there is no answer to that. But my prediction is it's probably going to get worse, and that's going to take a lot of leadership to help people out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the best solutions that you've seen for helping people to get, let's say, just the homeless issue? Mm-hmm.
There's right now the biggest need is permanent supportive housing. So these are for people that have multiple issues going on with them. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the bottleneck in a lot of these. And I think that's where the crossover with healthcare comes in as well, is the amazing people in the mental health field are doing extremely good work with the tools they have. And my only kind of comment on that is that, we need to be looking at other areas of the health field to help these people out and get them healthier. And that's kind of not in the conversations as much as I think it should be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what difference would it make if people were healthier?
Right. In those circumstances, you're looking at better decisions and being able to function better. And if people are able to function better, then they're able to hold employment then that should be more profitable for them, or make less of the negative spending if that's an issue as well. But usually it's not with such low income. And that does really fit into how people also handle stress and physically are able to go about their day and actually have a productive day and struggle less and suffer less. And that would be the goal, is to get people functioning and feeling better so that there's less problems. And we've all been in those situations where we're stressed out and we start to get more irritable. Well, pretty much every job position out there, you've got to interact with someone. And if physically you don't feel good, you don't interact well with others. Mm-hmm. And then how can you hold down good employment and or even work longer hours? And the answer to that, we all know. And so it really does become a huge part of this puzzle that I think is underserved at this point in time.
Yeah. And I think what's also part of the complexity of things is when people are served by systems, that happens between 8:15 and 4 o'clock, if you're lucky.
Right.
So that's not when the problems happen. Surprise. That's, you know, it's people during the daytime typically often have some sort of routine that's pretty reasonably decent, you know, and can stay sort of functional. It's those sort of after certain times of day when the social supports aren't in place or the observer effect isn't in place or the people who are observing you are in the same boat as you. So, you know, you get it.
And this does come down to that social piece. And we're seeing that supports in the mental health field are 24/7 and that there are a lot of really great people doing those support roles.
Right. And, so are those, I need to ask, is that support roles? No judgment about it, but is it support roles that are over the phone or is it support roles that are boots on the ground?
There's going to be a combination. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And for some people it needs to be boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be a certain population that's going to always need care.
And, yes.
And the whole thing of the treating these physical issues and putting more resources in kind of in that health area, of course, is going to help a certain segment. And then there's also still going to be a segment that struggles. And that's kind of just the reality of things. And, but would we be able to make a bigger dent if we concentrated in different health arenas? And I believe the answer is, of course, we can. And there's obviously the need for that integration and multi-pronged, multi-discipline approach to it. And we can't just throw a pill at it and think it's going to go away.
Mm-hmm. And so where does the family fit into this? Family support, family. Are they the first responders or are they the last responders?
Family is always going to be the first and maybe even the drivers to some of these problems. Mm-hmm. And a combination of both. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge part of the population too in this arena that are called the concealed homeless, because they're couch surfing or they're staying with friends and family. Mm-hmm. So they don't show up in the system as much. They're going place to place and they're struggling. They're trying to find and make a better way if that's the case, or just going day to day, trying to survive. And that's an issue as well, of course, and it doesn't necessarily show up in some of the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and has there been an increase in that since the last 10 years, or maybe 8 years, where the economies around the world have been sort of?
I would imagine it's gone up a lot, and two, you're going to see this in probably a lot of different demographics of the population that's maybe higher functioning. that, yeah, job issues happen and you're you're now out of a job and staying with your family for a while until you get your feet back on the ground. And then there's huge implications that way. And that leads to more and more kind of mental health issues or in the short term as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think families have been discouraged in our culture from helping other family members in some ways, you know, like pick yourself up by your bootstraps, just you'll figure it out. But months and months and months, people are not figuring it out. And then that ends up with them.
I think they get tired and fatigued of it as well.
Sure.
And absolutely. It's okay. Why is the black sheep of the family on the couch again? type thing.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, just to kind of be blunt with that point, but mm-hmm. yeah, family members and friends are going to get tired of the same person that's kind of got themselves in the same situations.
Right. So there's those people. And then I also think that there's people who've lost employment legitimately over the past 6-7 years, whatever, yeah. Like people who would have never thought they would have credit problems, just mm-hmm. don't like their credit's blown, you know, they took out too big a house loan. They took, you know, had the boats and the cars and the this and the that and got overextended. People who own multimillionaires who own businesses here who absolutely. Went under. So it's not just people who've been the black sheep, it's people who've been quite successful. And that's sometimes even harder for them because they're like, I'm not telling anybody what's going on, man.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, I've been through that situation myself where I went from treating professional athletes to, oh, here's a whole bunch of student loan debt and you're in between positions and you need to come up with money for licensing and everything else. And where are you getting that from? And mm-hmm. it's a hard area, and you feel your physical health deteriorate with that. Mm-hmm. And it's anything mentally that's going to put such a stress and burden on you is also going to physically affect you. And that can lead to chronic health conditions. I did an interview with one individual. He was in them like hundreds of millions or billions of dollars with companies. Mm-hmm. And then he figured he gave himself this rare autoimmune condition because of all the stress he was under. And so the autoimmune condition was Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which basically the immune system starts attacking all your skin and glands and this skin starts to blister and kind of melt away from you. And not many survive from it. So, yeah, this is a very successful individual who, under a whole lot of stress, and his system starts to fail. So there is a whole lot of burden to the healthcare system because people have the stress from these situations as well, and we need to look at all of it, of course, across multiple areas and really kind of in these periods of disruption and chaos that happens in society, we the be kind and all this messaging is really, really important. But we also need to look at how to physically support people, and so that their health doesn't deteriorate into a position where it's in the hospital or lines into the doctor's offices to get better.
Some people, and some people don't want to play along, as also that, like, they just don't have an interest, or when they are in pain, they don't have an interest in getting well at all. So, or they'll just kind of skate on the edge of things until they're really in dire straits. So that's a pride thing too, right?
It's also, kind of meeting people where they're at and realizing that some people are going to hit rock bottom before they bounce back up, and others, maybe an intervention or something before that is going to save them from hitting rock bottom.
Right. And I just said something that I think is like a underlying subconscious thought, which is it's like the pride before the fall. But is that true? You know, so when you look at people who are struggling, is it really that they're proud that they don't want to, that they're too proud to share, or is it they actually have a neurological thing going on that they're not self-identifying?
Right.
And that's a very, very big distinction.
And it's going to be both. We all have neurologic issues. And when
we all have neurological issues. Oh, no.
Right.
When
we say that, it's exactly that response. It's like,
yes.
Oh, my God, don't say that. Like, there's nothing wrong with my brain.
That's right.
Well, let's take everything kind of on this spectrum from pathology to peak performance. And yeah, there are weaknesses in all of our brains and nervous systems and ways we can make ourselves healthier so that we function and feel better. Mm-hmm. And that's the point to hammer home. It's not that, oh, you've got this diagnosis or there's something horribly wrong with your brain. No, that's not the point we're trying to make. The point is, obviously, there are weaknesses in how we feel, and that drives us to different situations, and that are probably going to be harmful and not serve us. So it's a key to figure out ways to make ourselves feel better, perform better, and live a happier, better life, and be able to handle these situations better so that we don't fall down as hard.
Yeah. And one of the things that I thought was a really big gift early on in my life was that I got the idea that it didn't take forever to fix things or to change them.
Yeah.
And so there was this
transformation happens at a decision, right?
Right. And
a lot of the brain is a yes or no pathway. Mm-hmm. It's a do or don't do pathway. So it can be made that simple in a lot of cases.
Yeah, it's powerful to know that, because I think people then go, well, I don't have any power or control over anything because all of this other stuff has hold of me. Mm-hmm. All this other stuff has hold of me, and I've got no control or power here, which is self-defeating too. You know, so you might have some very real things going on in your brain, and you still have this ability to go, okay, what can I do about it? And yeah. So with the DNA thing, because somebody was asking me more about the DNA testing this past week. Can you talk a little bit more about that again, and then how people could find out more for themselves or for somebody who is maybe struggling?
Yeah.
Buy a 10-pack for your friends and family.
On my podcast, I interviewed the CEO for a DNA company, and he went through what his company's doing with functional genomics. Mm-hmm. So they're taking the genomics, and there's different kind of variations of a different gene, and that's going to change this process that comes out of basically what the blueprint of the human body tells the rest of the body to do and perform. And let's take dopamine, since dopamine is such a big example, is that yeah, there are genetic variants where dopamine is going to be very efficient, or it's going to be very kind of almost deficient, that it kind of just pumps out here and there. And then, of course, if that's the case, you're looking to find ways to pump out more dopamine because you don't have that steady state of it being produced. So then, of course, you're searching and you're driving for that and craving it more. Mm-hmm. Well, then there's different ways to support the dopamine system so that it's more efficient. And then hopefully it leads to less of that craving or desire to continually pump out dopamine and find something that will stimulate it. I also think that and this goes into the exercise model too. Mm-hmm. So they give kind of these exercise, diet, and lifestyle things too that will kind of bring it up to a level where it's hopefully more sustainable, and versus that world where you're constantly craving that next hit of dopamine and whatever will produce it. And so it's looking at that blueprint and it's okay, well, it's deficient in this metabolic pathway, and here's ways we can support it. And that becomes very empowering. Mm-hmm. And this also goes into then that huge, huge kind of debate of, well, how can we actually make inroads into the addiction world so there's less relapse and people can actually go on without always constantly needing something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is a very exciting kind of area and field to be in and to explore. And then, of course, there's serotonin. So the serotonergic system, too, can obviously, if it's not functioning properly, lead to feelings of more depression and that area and less body sensations. Well, there's ways to support serotonin. So people aren't always running to the fridge to find that sugar hit to help them out, or all these other areas. So it's fascinating, and it's one of these kind of rabbit holes I'm starting to fall down myself and learn more and more about. And then two, meshing that up with a stimulation model where, okay, are there more precise exercises that we can do to kind of build these areas of the brain so that they are producing more stability in these different pathways, and the results are really, really detailed and personalized when you take that approach.
Mm-hmm. And so how can people get their hands on that DNA testing protocol or the kit or the all that?
Yeah, I'll send a link that you can put in the show notes there.
Okay, great. So make sure you check that out, guys. If you're and it's like people who are interested in hacking through their own sort of self-talk of, you know, I am this, I am that, having a little bit of evidence on a piece of paper might help to dial in what's going on. And like when I'm joking, but not joking, when I say buy a 10 pack for your friends, because like all of all these healing modalities or assessments that can give you some sort of more insight about your behavior, sometimes people who are homeless can't afford that kind of thing, or who are teetering on the edge of homelessness, but it could be the thing that would help them to get the insight to be able to actually change that just enough that they could keep, you know, get steadied and righted again. And I mean righted like a ship, you know, so you're not offside all the, but you're just kind of sailing the calm ocean. And so when for people who have, this is kind of a have not way that you can help people to get some tools that might help them. And I'm a fan of that. So
and I think we're going to see more of that, hopefully, is that, yeah, either there's a big shift in the bureaucracy of healthcare and how it's implemented, or we start to see more and more kind of nonprofits start to fund things so that people can get healthier. But unfortunately, yeah, right now it is the people that need it the most are probably not getting it. And
Right.
And that will require more time, more research, and more resources. And no one wants to hear that.
That's so, right. Exactly. That's, well, and when you've been on benefits forever, you don't really feel like you should have to pay out of pocket for any of this stuff. But
and nor can you, because it's new field. And the biohacking world is, for at this current state in time, well-educated people that are looking for performance to help them get better, whether it's an athlete or entrepreneurs or CEOs. These are the kind of the echelon of society that's looking at these fields and diving into it. But that's kind of the far end of the spectrum, the peak performance. And it's the people struggling on the other side that would probably really benefit society a lot more if we were to implement some of these new and innovative strategies. So the biggest stimulation to the brain is movement, and doing it in ways that are not going to tire you out, but actually get the body moving. And that's going to get the brain working and stimulate it. You might not notice this huge spike in how you're feeling right away, but we're meant to be moving several times, multiple times throughout our day. And if we don't, that's when we start to fall apart and deteriorate even quicker.
Right. I'm such a huge fan of Qigong, and still people don't even know what I'm talking about. So come to the Master Your Life website and check out Lee Holden Qigong. So that's Qigong. And it's now you can do a 30-day challenge there for nothing. So you can check that out. And 30-day challenge is like, it's a turn stress into vital energy, no pain, no pain. That's not a 30-day challenge where you're kicking your own, but you're showing up and it's really beautiful. So that's a free thing. So again, come to the masteryourlife.ca website so that you can check that out and other healing technologies that help you to take back your health and well-being that are within your pocketbook, whatever that might be. Dr. Dave, we're almost out of time for today. So what would be some final parting words you'd like to share with people who are either struggling themselves or have family members that are struggling with homelessness or just being on the verge of it? Because we're coming into winter in Canada. It is a serious thing. It's not like we're living on the sunny beach somewhere. People die here from not having a roof over their head.
Absolutely. Search out those resources. The main thing is trying to do the stress management and stress reduction. So not letting your body deteriorate because of the stressful condition you're under. So look at those free techniques of just doing some deep breathing, relaxing music, and movement, just going for a walk someplace that's going to clear your head. And doing that as often as possible, as often as you need, and then find those connections in your life too that help you mentally as well.
Yeah, beautifully put. That help you mentally, physically, and emotionally. So everyone, love yourselves. Start there. Love each other. Mind your minds. Take care of your brains. For more, you can reach out to Dr. David Hardy at thehardybrain.ca, or you can come to masteryourlife.ca. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in and sharing this episode far and wide to help people help themselves to be a better human. All right, everyone, take care. That's all for us. Bye for now.
Thank you for being a part of our program today. Master Your Life is a presentation of Leah Mattinson Enterprises, Inc. Join us next time on Master Your Life, helping you to discover the very best of you.